reached the final level. The Spicy McNugget side mission. Maximum flavour, crispy crunch, and a spicy dip with a kick.
Are you ready?
Spicy McNuggets, for a limited time only. Until the 9th of September 25. Fees apply to delivery. Participation and price may vary. Subject to availability. Serving times apply.
Welcome to Peak to Pit. Allie Peak, TJ Pittinger, talking college football and anything else we feel like discussing. I don't really know that I want to talk college football this week, TJ. Can we maybe decide our pod's going to be about, like, I don't know, fall farm activities or something? I don't know, something, anything other than college football?
We could talk different kinds of chili. We could talk cheese boards. We could talk bounce houses.
You know, I got, like, a good charcuterie board.
Which is what I had for dinner last night.
Leftovers. Oh, perfect. There you go.
So, yeah, not the best weekend for Florida. Not a great weekend for Florida State either, but maybe a few moral victories to take away from the game. But, yeah, Florida's we can start with that. We'll get your pain out of the way. But not a great showing from UF at all. Actually, not – the most terrible, maybe the first 25 minutes of the first
half. Honestly, you take away the, and obviously you can't do this, right? So, like, I'm not, this is not saying Florida almost won or anything like that. But if you take away the last 2.5 minutes of the second quarter, this Florida still loses, but it looks a lot more like it felt when you watched it, I think. Mm-hmm. The last 2.5 minutes of the second quarter killed Florida. They killed, I mean, think about how close Florida was to going into halftime down 3-0. Had they gone into halftime down 3-0, that second half might have turned out entirely differently. I mean, maybe it doesn't, but there's almost no coming back from being down 24-0. So, but 3-0, going into the locker room down 3-0, has Georgia concerned and has Florida feeling pretty good about themselves. That last 2.5 minutes was just kind of filled with some, you know, questionable decision-making on the coaching staff, questionable decision-making on Richardson, some bad luck thrown in. It was a miserable 2.5 minutes to watch, and it sealed Florida's fate. But you know what? Something you and I talked about, we watched this game together, and something you and I talked about is Mullen was in a no-win situation, and a part of that is of his own doing. But, you know, if Florida wins that game with Anthony Richardson as the starter, the fans are going to say what could have been had Mullen started him earlier, right? They lose that game, but in a close fashion. Let's just say the last 2.5 minutes don't happen in that second quarter, but the rest of the game plays out as it does. And the game finishes, much closer than it was. Then the line's going to be, if AR had started earlier in the season and gotten more reps under his belt instead of his first start coming against the number one defense in the country, maybe that turns out differently. What did happen is that Florida got blown out, and I have seen so many fans say things like, you know, Mullen put AR in a bad position on purpose. He wanted to prove that, like, see, this is why I didn't go with him. And I don't know that I think any of those scenarios are fair, but I think that it was very hard for Mullen to have walked out of this weekend winning it. You know, not just winning the game, but kind of winning the perception of the weekend. I think that Anthony Richardson looked like people that have been watching practice for the last 2 years kind of expected him to look like, which is raw. I think he is very talented. Right. I think that his ceiling is higher than Emory Jones's, which is what makes him intriguing. And at this point, if the season's over anyway, that's maybe who you ride to get that game experience. But I do think that this kind of showed that, like, hey, maybe this is why things were the way that they were. And Emory came in, and I don't, like I said, I think AR has a higher ceiling than Emory, but Emory had a better showing against Georgia than Anthony Richardson had. He seemed a little bit more in control, and some of that might be experience in the system, his age. I mean, at this moment, neither one of them are world beaters, right? And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's the big takeaway, is that there have been times where Emory has come out and looked pretty good, and there have been times when Richardson's come out and looked pretty good, and a lot of the Richardson hype, and I'm not saying I agree with you that he has a higher ceiling, but a lot of the Richardson hype came very late in games against really bad opponents. And so,
and yes, kind of fluky things, right? Where like the average fan maybe doesn't know that he totally made the wrong read, but he's athletic and something good came out of it.
It's thrilling that he leaps over a guy. Sure. That he runs for a 75-yard run. But when you're doing that late in the game against a terrible USF team or FAU team, or, you know, he had some really, really nice plays against LSU. He dropped. Mm-hmm. But that's just what youth and being raw is. Like, he's an athlete, and so he drops a pass perfectly in the breadbasket against LSU for a touchdown that gets Florida back in the game. And then he throws, like, one of the worst passes you've ever seen a quarterback throw to end that game. And so it's just very hot and cold, and that's what you get. And he was fine through the first, like you said, 25 minutes, but then obviously just an awful 5 minutes for UF overall. He had the two picks and a fumble that, you know, kind of sealed Florida's fate. Once they went down 24-0, I don't think anybody thought that they were going to come back in the second half. And so –
right.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I don't know if Mullen caved to all the pressure around, you know, start Anthony, but it didn't necessarily look like he was ready for this game.
It needs to be made clear that it's asinine to think that he wasn't ready purposefully, right? He could not be ready because either A, he doesn't have the skill set, B, he's still learning the system, C, God knows what. But the idea that Mullen didn't prepare him purposefully or called plays to put him in a poor position is asinine. Right? I mean,
I think so. Yeah, I don't think
Mullen. I think just crazy talk.
Like, fed him to the wolves. I think it's the other side of things. I think it's that what you've seen from Mullen in a lot of his career is that he's going to most of the time ride with those guys that have a little bit more seniority. Mm-hmm. He's going to favor those guys, whether you like it or not, whether you think it's fair or not, whether you think Anthony's the future or not, whether you think Emery sucks or not. That's typically going to be his MO and what he's going to do.
I honestly don't really have a problem with that. I think if you're the younger guy, you have to be way more talented and further along in your development than somebody your age normally is. And it's not about favoritism. It's about, it makes more sense that a guy that's been in the system longer gets it better, knows it more, has more trust instilled in him. That's not a, I just like older guys because I've developed some sort of relationship with them because they've been in my system kind of thing. That's logic, right? Somebody that can come in that's super young and take the place of an older guy has something special. And I'm not saying AR doesn't have something special. I think that he can be, but that is not the norm.
I think if you know, like we've talked about, everybody loves the backup quarterback, but I think if you were to play either one of these quarterbacks for the first 8 games of Florida's season, I don't see any result necessarily going much differently. Right. Like I think the record is probably, maybe I think the record is probably 4-4, just like it is right now. Like, and so, you know, I'm certainly not going to.
And maybe that's an argument for Anthony Richardson then. Right. Because you have a younger guy that you have longer to develop and have longer to be in your system. I don't know. I just think, and I've been saying this for weeks, I hesitate to say that I know better than the guy that's getting paid $7 million who watches practice.
Which is rare, because most people on Twitter do know better than Dan.
Well, that's true.
And so it's rare that, like, it's just humility that you're showing by not thinking that you know better.
Well, listen, you know, if practices were open or something, maybe I would have a different opinion. But we just fancy 10% of what actually goes on. So it's really difficult to make a judgment on that 10%, especially when this isn't my job, right? If I was a college football coach, maybe I could more clearly look at the situation and get in Mullen's head or something like that. But that, I don't know. I just think it's kind of silly for all of us to sit here and talk about what Mullen should have done differently when we're not in his shoes. I mean,
it's kind of asinine, like you said. Like, you know, football coaches know that if they want to continue, although one of the best jobs in America is to be a fired football coach, but
sure,
football coaches know that if they want to continue coaching, they're not out there purposely trying to spite themselves.
Like,
they're
going
to put, they're going to put guys on the field that make the most sense and, sure, and are the best, unless the coach is just completely incompetent. Right.
Right.
Like, and then in that situation, you could kind of say, and I think, you know, there are a lot of complaints and concerns and things being raised about Dan Mullen right now, but I don't think anybody would say that he's completely incompetent.
No.
He's too stupid to know which quarterback to go with. Right. Like, so it's just always been,
it's always been
kind of annoying to see, like, oh, if we had this guy in, we're probably undefeated. And then you kind of like see, although Georgia is probably the best team in the country and has the best defense in the country, undoubtedly. And, you know, Georgia's defense scored more than any other unit, you know, well, you know, gave their offense balls in short fields and pick sixes and things, like, their defense essentially won them that game. But, you know, it's funny to think that, oh, if we had just done this one thing, like, Mullen just didn't have any kind of clue as to who should be starting or what should be going
on. Or care what the outcome of this game is. And that, I think, is another point that is annoying to me. As a fan, you do not want the win more than the people in that football building, right? Like, in that locker room, in that football facility, those people inside there, either their future depends on it, if they're a player, and I mean, I guess as a coach too, or their, you know, whether or not they put food on the table depends on it. I know Mullen makes $7 million a year, but I promise you that defensive analyst in there who's making, you know, 47 really wants this win to happen so that he can advance his career, so that his wife can quit work and stay home. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, there's so many things dependent on winning that go on in that building. So the idea that somebody that played high school football and is sitting on their couch at home, you know, wants that win more, drives me nuts. And I think part of that is, I know the kind of things that Eric went through when he played at Florida. I know some of the things that went on at the during the time my brother was at Florida. And I mean, those are times when two national championships were won. And I know the kind of things that fans did in the good times. So I can really only imagine some of the things that are being done and said now that it's, you know, not some of the good times. So it's just, I don't know. It's very irritating to me. I think you can rightfully criticize play. I even think you can question, you know, decisions that are made and things like that. I just think questioning effort is annoying to me.
Yeah. So Georgia looked like they had some kinks in the armor as well.
Yeah.
Starting a backup quarterback, right? Like, I think that'll be very interesting to see if JT Daniels can get back.
Yeah, starting a backup quarterback, but a backup quarterback that played pretty much the entire season last year too. So it's not
but they certainly looked.
He had more game experience than either quarterback Florida put on the field.
Yeah, I mean, but if you watched the games last year with Bennett compared to Daniels, I mean, Daniels was an automatic upgrade when he came in.
I get that, but
game experience doesn't mean anything if the guy sucks.
I don't think Stetson Bennett sucks. I think he's not as good as Daniels, but I don't think he sucks. And he's played more games than either of the quarterbacks Florida started.
He's a serviceable backup at best. He threw 55% last year, which was really, really bad.
Yeah.
He had 8 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. You know, I don't think he's very good. And they didn't let him throw the ball at all. Like, he had 19 passing attempts in the game. 2 of those picked off. I think Georgia knew that they could just kind of run the ball and wait for Florida to make the mistakes. But, I mean, Anthony Richardson had more passing attempts than Stetson Bennett did. Florida threw the ball 35 times compared to Bennett, who threw it 19 times. And so it'll be interesting to see what JT Daniels' outlook looks like, because if he gets back, you know, his statistics compared to what – Bennett's look like, I mean, he's much more accurate. He has a much better touchdown to interception. You know, I think it'll be different if they can get him back. Now, Georgia's lucky in the fact that they don't play anybody the rest of the
week.
They have Missouri, who's at home this weekend, who they're a 38-point favorite against. They do have Tennessee, who's playing much, much better as of late. Tennessee's 4-4 as well. So they have Tennessee, and then they play a couple of cupcakes. They play Charleston Southern and at Georgia Tech to finish out the year. Obviously, they'll play Bama unless something crazy happens in Atlanta. But they don't play anybody the rest of the way. And with the, we'll talk about the playoff rankings coming out in just a minute, but with Bama UGA at 1-2, that is certainly setting up for a both of those teams to get into the playoff if Bama
regardless.
If Georgia, yeah. Georgia wins, I do think it knocks Bama out unless enough craziness happens. But if Georgia, if Bama wins, I think they're both in.
I think that Georgia is less solid than I thought they were prior to Florida playing that game. I mean, Georgia's a great team. I'm not taking away from that, but I definitely don't think that this Georgia team is unbeatable. But it'll be interesting to see.
So Daniels was available on Saturday, but just didn't play.
Well, which is an interesting concept, right? Because being clear, medically cleared and being 100% are definitely not the same thing. So maybe Georgia was that confident that they didn't need him and they wanted him to rest another week. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it may
maybe have been they would have put him in if they needed to.
If things had gotten kind of sideways.
South, yeah.
Which is risky, but
sure.
Obviously worked out well enough for them.
Right.
Okay, other side. So we'll talk a little bit more about Florida in just a few minutes. Florida State also drops a game on Saturday to Clemson. Florida State was a 10-point underdog. In fact, we both picked Florida State.
I bet on Florida State.
Thanks did a you lot, get it? Did you get it at 10 or 9.5?
9.5, I think.
So we bet it here on the show at 10. So we at least pushed on the show. So at least you have that going for you. Florida State ends up losing by 10 on kind of a freak last play.
Totally. I mean,
they you know.
Eric was so excited because he took Clemson.
We'll pull out the moral victory hat. And say that, you know, Florida State played Clemson closer than 10 points, right? And really had a chance at the end. I thought
that was kind of crazy at the end.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're listening to this, you've probably seen it. But just a hook and ladder that ended up being a fumble at the 5, and Clemson picked it up and walked it in with no time left. So, Florida State was down 20-24 with 6 seconds left. And then on the last play, that kind of happened. But Florida State led in this game with 5.5 minutes to go, actually led in this game and had the ball with under 2 minutes to go and could not when they led, it was 3.5 minutes to go. Florida State had a lead thanks to a strip sack, ended up giving the ball right back to Clemson, and Clemson scored to go up by 4, and then Florida State could not answer back. And so Clemson ends up winning, but I don't know, as happy as you could be with a loss. I mean, you're never really happy, but Florida State did not deserve to be in this game. Clemson missed several field goals in which they kind of could have put this game a little bit more out of reach. Florida State wasn't able to score in the second half outside of a strip sack fumble touchdown with 4 or 5 minutes left to go. That's what kind of gave Florida State fans some hope at the end. And then Clemson was able to answer with a touchdown and end up winning. But, you know, I guess the silver lining is if you look at the last few years against Clemson, we've lost by like 50 and 40 and 30. And so losing by 10, I guess, is a little bit better. Florida State gets to 3-5 on the season, probably ends all hope of bowl eligibility. I think if they'd have won that game, I think I like them to win 2 of the next 4 and make a bowl. I don't think I like them to win 3 of the next 4, especially when one of those is Florida in the swamp and one of those is a Miami team that kind of seems resurgent right now. So I think it'd be really, really tough to get 3 more wins. But I do think they could get 2. I'm not saying it's a lock for them to get 2, but looks better against Clemson. Clemson's defense is just so, so good. And Florida State's offense is so run heavy and so one dimensional in that aspect that we really just couldn't get much going. Our one big touchdown was a 75-yard wheel route, speaking of the Florida-Georgia game from last year, that they tackled the running back, but he never actually went down. Like his knee never hit and he just kept running and tight-roped the sideline and we ended up scoring. So, really outside of those two kind of fluky plays, I don't know. I don't want to call the wheel route fluky, but outside of one long offensive play and one kind of strip sack, Florida State scored 7 points on the day. And that's just not usually enough.
Enough to get it done.
So they hung around, though, and they kind of fought till the end and dropped a close one to Clemson. And you'd like to see, you know, we're 8 games in, 3-5. Haven't seen any quit out of the team just yet. So you'd hope that coming home against NC State, another winnable game, Florida State's a 3-point underdog. You'd hope that going to that NC State game, guys are kind of fired up to play. It's an afternoon game. It's a 4 o'clock kick back in Doak. Obviously, it'd be fun to come back to Doak with a win against Clemson, but if guys can kind of keep playing hard and giving maximum effort, then I think that's what matters. I think what was sold to the recruits on the recruiting trail was we're going to go 6-6 this year, and you'll be the class that comes in and helps us
and
go
makes the difference.
And then your next year, we'll win 9 or 10 games, and we'll go and do that. I think if Florida State can find a way to get to 5, you can go back to them and just say, like, we dropped one game that we weren't supposed
right.
to. 4 is kind of like, you really underperformed. But if you can get to 5, I think that that's.
Do you think they even sell recruits a specific number, or do you think they just sell them on like, listen, we got a long way to go. We are improvement. There's a lot of improvement. Everybody's bought in, and you guys are going to make the difference, as opposed to like, hey, this is what we think. Because think about that getting back to your locker room prior to it ever happening. Because, I mean, do you think Norvell's going to stand up in the beginning of the season and be like, all right, listen, guys, 6-6. I'll be happy with 6-6. That's probably our ceiling. I mean, you want them to think that they can win any game.
Yeah, I think it's different messaging. But I think the team's not dumb. Like, the team knows when they're going. Like, you know, Mackenzie Milton knew that he was transferring into a 3-win program, right? You know, that Jordan Travis was the quarterback and led the team in a 3-win program. I don't think that any floor. And so to answer your question, to go back, I mean, that is absolutely what was told to the recruits. Like, I've been told that by people in the know. It was like that they told the recruit, like, we're going 6-6 and you're going to watch us double the win total. And then you're going to come in here and we're going to increase it again. So like, to answer your question, like, yes, that is absolutely what was told to them. But I don't know. I don't think that the locker room's not stupid. You know, I mean, I think they know when and what's happening and what's, you know, what the outlook of certain games is going in and where the deficiencies are on the program and, you know, that it's a rebuild and things like that. I think when you have people like Willie Taggart that come in and say, like, we're going to win right now, we're going to win and win a lot, we're going to be fast and we're going to be great. And
right.
This is full steam ahead. And then you win 5 games. It's a little different, right? Where as Norvell has been a little bit more transparent, like, hey, we're going to work to grow and build, and we're not happy with last year's results, but we're going to get better this year. Well, if they get to 5 wins, I mean, I do think they have gotten better this year. So, you know, Florida State went on a 3-game win streak and then essentially played Clemson as close as you could. Obviously, the final score doesn't really show that because of some fluky stuff at the end. But if they can find a way to beat NC State, you get to 4 wins. And I think the most likely win that they can have going down the stretch is going to be Boston College, who is really, really bad. Their quarterback's been out for a while. I still think Miami and Florida win those 2 games, but we'll see what Miami looks like this next week. And we'll see what Florida looks like against 3 bad opponents. I mean, I do think Florida State's the best team left on Florida's schedule, but that schedule is really, really bad coming down here the stretch. And I do think Florida ends up going 4-0 in it, but we'll see how much of a free fall UF goes into after their season's essentially over too. But I'd still probably take Florida by, I don't know, 10 or 14 in that game at this point. You know, I think that Florida State will be – we'll preview that game later. But I think Florida State will be able to run the ball okay on Florida. But I just don't – I think that when it all kind of comes down to it, Florida is probably 2 touchdowns better. So we'll see. But if they can upset somebody, then maybe they can make a bowl. Speaking of recruiting, some recruiting comments came out this week, and I want to get your take on them.
Yeah.
I think Dan Mullen needs a PR person. He needs a like a Jen Psaki or somebody like to like field his questions. Like, there's a reason that like Joe Biden very rarely answers questions in front of this country, but he needs somebody that's a little bit more well spoken. I think Dan Mullen gives off like, and I understand that he's probably very annoyed that his team is 4-4. I understand he's probably very annoyed that his team got blown out in their biggest rivalry game of the year. I understand that he's annoyed that there's a lot of pressure and other things, but he just comes off as incredibly sassy and incredibly annoyed when he's asked different questions. And, you know, Kirby, for those that are listening, Kirby Smart was asked about recruiting this weekend, gave an answer paraphrasing, oh, recruiting is the most important thing on this.
We're recruiting 24/7, 365. And if we're not, somebody else is. And he essentially said,
he said,
the best coaches in the country can't outcoach recruiting.
And then the next day, David Waters of Gators Breakdown, good buddy of mine, asked Coach Mullen, hey, recruiting has been brought up a couple of different times. Obviously, a direct result almost a direct reply to what Kirby's response
right.
was. He asked Mullen, hey, is there maybe a different approach to the year? Like, what are the thoughts around recruiting? And Mullen just very shortly snapped back and said, we're not talking about recruiting. We'll do recruiting when the season's over. But right now it's football season. Next question. And so I think that he is like the COVID thing, wanting full stadiums and like other things that he's kind of been snippy about. I think he just doesn't do himself any favors with the way that he responds like an asshole. And that's what he did to Dave the other day. And I think he could have handled that much better. And I think it was a terrible look. So I'll let you know.
So I have several thoughts on these. First of all, the press conference that Mullen had after Florida, Georgia, I think a lot of people walked away from being like, wow, this is Dan's best press conference since things started to head south. He took some accountability. He took, you know, blame on himself. He talked about some of their deficiencies. He actually seemed way less snappy than he had in, you know, the three previous press conferences to that. So I think that there was a lot of people on Monday that were like, man, Dan gets it, right? Yep. He took some accountability. And I will say, I don't think that Dan Mullen likes doing this media stuff. He is contractually obligated to do it. Some coaches like it, right? Some coaches like to joke with the media. I think Steve Spurrier is one that is, you know, was always so good with the media and funny. Even if he was totally smarky, like there was some playful banter. I don't know that I think that that's ever been Mullen's bag, right? And so then it's really not his bag when things are not going well. But I think that everybody thought that went really well. Supposedly, Mullen was pissed about how long that press conference went on and that he was up there as long as he was, which is an interesting, tidbit because he really did come off, I think, pretty well. I guess there's been some people that have been out from the communications department. I don't know, for what reason or whatever, but the people managing it were, I guess, not the normal people that run the press conference. And so I think maybe it's a little bit more controlled in other times. But then go to Monday, right? Dave Waters asked this question. I talked with Dave briefly either yesterday or today. I can't remember. They all kind of run together. And he had the same take on it that I got from reading all of these things, which is really that it was a really bad quote from Mullen, but it was also really taken out of context by like everybody else in the media. And I think Dave actually even feels a little bit bad about that, which he shouldn't, because it was a completely legitimate question. I think specifically following up to what Kirby had said after the Florida Georgia game, it's a legitimate question to ask about recruiting. I think that it's obvious that Dan Mullen is not a world beater recruiting wise. I do think it's important to mention that he finished with the top 7 and the top 8 class the last 2 years. So he's also not horrific at it, right? I think that the Florida standard is higher than 7 or 8 for your recruiting class, but I don't think that those are horrible, horrible numbers either. I personally don't know that I think that what we saw on Saturday was really a huge result of Georgia recruiting better. Florida beat Georgia last year. I think there you could probably look at coaching even more so than you could look at recruiting just for what happened on Saturday. But Mullen's answer was to the question about talking about recruiting. And I think if you read a lot of, especially from reporters who weren't in that room or well on that Zoom, but you know, involved in that press conference, you would get the feeling that Mullen was saying he's not recruiting until recruiting season, which is not what he was saying. He was saying he's not going to discuss
because he, and here's why, and I completely agree with you. He did not say that we are not recruiting. His he actually did say that. But what he meant,
we're not talking about recruiting right now.
And that is, again, Mullen shooting him himself in the face, getting the fan base to hate him even more because he sounds like a whiny little you-know-what when he gets his feelings hurt. And I know he doesn't like media, neither does Greg Popovich. But Greg Popovich won, like, six NBA titles, so he could be an a-hole when people ask him questions. So Mullen was very well aware of Kirby's answer. Mullen was very well aware that Dave was asking him that in response to Kirby's answer.
Sure.
And so he was a short, whiny little brat about it.
I think he could have had a much better answer.
Because of that, his words do get twisted, and his words get taken literally instead of in the
context that they were meant.
Mike Norvell's team is 3-5, worse than Dan Mullen's.
Right.
Not even close, right?
Right.
And today, recruiting continues to be brought up, and Mike Norvell just lost on the road against a rival.
Well,
and
Norvell would be real dumb today after what Mullen said yesterday and Kirby said on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, I've never seen
not give that. The answer that he gave.
And to be very honest with you, Mullen's the only coach in America that I think has made an answer like this on the whole recruiting thing. But Norvell came out, and just all you have to do is do coach speak. All you have to do,
because they're not Mullen actually supposed to mention any coach, any pair at all. You
Kirby's
have to
response,
be very general.
Kirby's response wasn't that. I was talking with somebody on the FSU beat tonight. Kirby's response wasn't impressive. I mean, it was the right answer, but like
he didn't
say anything that was like, "Oh my gosh, Kirby Smart!" Like, how did you think? Kirby Smart, like, he's the first one to think of always be recruiting. Like, no, everyone's always said that. Like, that's just, it's like always be closing. Like, it's like a sales thing. And so Norvell was asked about it today. 100% coach speak. Really excited about the guys we've been able to bring in here. There's a lot of momentum. We're excited what FSU's doing right now. The guys like that we're showing improvement. Boom. Next question.
Right.
And so Mullen sounded snarky and whiny and bratty, and his words end up getting taken
out of context.
Out of context, but also literally, if you say something without thinking and without being deliberate and sounding like a brat, people are going to take you at your word, right?
Sure.
It's not my job to figure out what Dan Mullen's hidden meaning
Let's play devil's advocate for a minute. Well, first of all, it's not really his hidden meaning. We're not doing recruiting right now. We're not talking about recruiting right now is exactly what it meant.
That's not what he said, though. What he said was we're not doing recruiting.
The person that asked the question knew exactly what he was saying.
And every think piece and every article and every recruit that has seen it since then has nobody on social media. Now all these think pieces are coming out from The Athletic and everywhere else.
Well, and I want to talk about that Athletic piece as well, if we can. There was an article that came out that talked about some SEC coaches who anonymously went on the record and talked about the problems that they saw at Florida. And this is my issue with that. Right. They could be completely right. Okay. But there is zero benefit to an SEC coach anonymously saying positive things about Florida. It's not going to happen. But there's a great opportunity for coaches to go on the record without having to attach their name to it and getting into recruits' heads by talking poorly about the University of Florida. So everything that they said could very well have been accurate, but I think it's really disingenuous for us to pretend like, when I say us, I don't mean us on the show. I mean, just people in general, to pretend like these SEC coaches don't have some stake in making the other programs that they're recruiting against look bad.
That's true, but have you seen any of those other think pieces about anybody else?
Well, and that's interesting, too, because why are they not out about LSU? They could be.
I think that LSU, with their coaching change and other things that are happening, like LSU is kind of like, you did see some of that.
They couldn't have written this about Ed O last year?
I mean,
bringing his girlfriend's kids to practice and some of the stuff that has come out since he got fired? I mean,
I don't know. I think that Florida has given
them.
I think Florida's given them an opportunity to do that with really how they play over the last year.
Florida's not performed well this year. That's not a secret. That's not something that, you know, that's Florida has had a disappointing season to for everybody, for fans, for players, for coaches, for everybody involved. This has not played out the way that Florida had hoped that the season would play out. But it's very disingenuous for us to act like these coaches out of the goodness of their heart or their concern for, you know, this just isn't the Gators that we expected. No, this is every opportunity to take a shot at them. And look, I think that there needs to be some media counseling that's going on at UF. Let's circle the wagons. Let's, you know, figure out a way to deliver our message because we're missing the mark.
Instead of that, they just shut down all media availability. instead of dealing with it, they just called a lid so that they wouldn't have to talk with any more media or nothing else could get misconstrued, but also, again, not a good look.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm fine with it.
If my coach continued to put his foot in his mouth, I'd want him to shut up too. So yes, I agree with you on that.
I just don't know that there's any winning, right? So with that question, do you say, you know, our recruiting is going well? Because guess what? It's not. So then is he disingenuous because he lied about the class that he's putting together? Do you, like, what is the answer that satisfies?
Winning. On the field.
Okay. You're Dan Mullen. Nobody cares about this crap. And I ask you that. What do you say?
What was the question again? Sorry.
Pretend I'm Dave Waters and I'm asking you, you know,
about recruiting? You know,
about recruiting. What is the correct answer that doesn't make him look like he's lying about the class that he's lost people at this year that's ranked like, you know, 30 something right now?
I mean, I think you just give a BS fluff. Hey, we're really excited about the guys that are going to come in here and be program changers and make differences. But we're really, really excited about the guys on this year's team too. And we're focused on South Carolina, but we are absolutely over the moon about recruiting those guys that are coming in next. You know, I don't know. Like, that's not that hard. I'm not making $7 million a year and I can come up with BS.
The crazy thing too. Florida gets asked that question while they're winning. Let's say their class is the same ranking, but they're winning, right? Nobody cares that Dan Mullen says we're not talking about recruiting. We're talking about the team.
But you can't be – so Kobe was an a-hole, and Michael Jordan was an a-hole. And LeBron's actually a pretty nice guy. So, like, that – and, like, before Tom got to Tampa, he was an a-hole, right? Like, everyone that went – it's not really a problem if you're winning. But you can't be an a-hole and a loser.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, that's kind of the point, right? Jimbo was an asshole. Like –
the craziest part about all of this is that Dan Mullen, behind closed doors, is actually the nicest out of all the guys we've had coaching, probably our last five coaches. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's not necessarily nice to the media or comes off that way, but in real life, Dan Mullen is actually the nicest guy out of all of those ones that we've had.
He comes off like a jerk, and you can't come off like a jerk unless you're winning.
And lose, right.
You know, right. And that's,
I think that's fair. I'm interested to see. So I have some theories about why this is the way it is too. And I mean, I could be completely wrong, but one of the things that Mullen said, one of the times that we were up in Gainesville, his very first season, was that the guys that he had inherited were scared of losing, that they didn't love. It's not that they loved winning and hated losing, that they were scared of losing and they didn't know how to have fun. And that he, felt like part of his job was letting them see that this game that they play is fun, right? And I think that that was an important lesson year one. But now fast forward to this year, and you know, you look at Florida's sideline and you see the specialists pretending that they're a stationary bike, right? Like a human stationary bike. And you know, they're crowd surfing amongst themselves on the sideline when we're down against Alabama, but made a good play and things like that. And then you couple that with a lot of penalties and lack of fundamentals. I think that it really sends the message that this is an undisciplined team. And it makes me wonder if that all stems, like how do you flip that switch from let me teach these guys that this game is fun and remind them why they love it and why they're playing it to, okay, time to buckle down. Because Saban wouldn't have let any of that stuff fly on the sidelines, right? And those are things that were pointed out early in the season when Florida still had, there was very high hopes for Florida still, was like, yikes, those are not the kind of things that Meyer would have let fly. Those are not the kind of things that Muschamp would have let fly. Those are, Nick Saban would have sacrificed somebody at halftime had he seen some of those things. And I think that, you know, in isolation, they're fun and playful and things like that. But back up and look at the bigger picture and see where there is other aspects that are very undisciplined. It's all kind of connected. And I do wonder if that's where that stems from. Is that just like, how do you flip back? And maybe, honestly, maybe that's not even, maybe that's savage, right? Maybe that's something that strength coach has to be in charge of, being the complete asshole, because that's his role to play. That's kind of the role that Mick always played for Urban Meyer. I don't know. I just, there has got to be more discipline in that locker room and accountability. And while Mullen's the head coach, it starts with him. I'm not sure who the person is that enforces that on a day-to-day, but I think that it's probably position coaches and strength coaches more so even than Dan Mullen. It's got to come from him. The orders have to come from the general. That's how that works. But I don't know.
So Florida plays four bad teams to finish out the year, and I think they'll get a little bit of a boost thanks to that.
Sure.
I think it's a little artificial, but I think that you'll take any boost you can get at this point.
Sure.
It's probably very similar to the boost they had at the beginning of the year by playing FAU and USF and having Anthony Richardson dunk all over people and then having to run into the meat of the schedule. But I do think Florida will go 4-0, and I think that if they were to lose any of the four games, it would be pretty unacceptable. To lose any of these. Missouri is really, really bad. South Carolina is really, really bad. Has no offense at all. And then who is it? Samford. And then they do get FSU, which I think Florida State's playing better and improved. But I still, like I said, I still think Florida should win that by two touchdowns. I think Florida will probably come out as a 13-ish, 14-point favorite, would just kind of be my guess in that game. And so, you know, I guess we'll see what Florida State does between now and then. If they go 3-0 in their next three games, maybe I'll change my mind on that. But if the two teams play today, I think I'd take Florida by a couple of touchdowns. So I think they'll finish this year in 8-4. And then I know you don't think they are, but bowl games are relatively meaningless when you have guys on both sides opting out now and not playing it. Meaningless in the fact of being able to tell anything from bowl games. And I certainly don't believe that winning or losing a bowl game, I guess unless it's the national championship, means anything.
Or unless you play Oklahoma, because you certainly thought it meant something last year.
Well, I was just taking your lead when you said that it meant something. You convinced me last year, but I'm back on the not meaning anything bandwagon. But Florida's schedule next year is interesting. They play Utah game one, and then they play Kentucky, which was a good game this year. They play USF. Yeah. And they play Tennessee, and they play Eastern Washington and Missouri. So I think they've got a real chance to be 1-2-3-4-5-6-0 starting the year, 5-1 at worst. I do think Tennessee is getting a little bit better. Kentucky was not an easy game.
No, Kentucky and Tennessee are both trending in the right direction.
Utah is an interesting one. They were really good last year.
It's not starting with FAU, that's for sure.
They haven't been super, super good this year, 5-3 currently. So we'll kind of see. I don't expect Utah to be able to kind of hang with Florida in the trenches. But then we get to the meat of the schedule again. And I hate to look ahead to Florida's schedule, but then you play, just like last year, LSU, Georgia, and Texas A&M in three straight games, right? There's a bye between the LSU and Georgia game.
Yeah.
And so if Florida starts out 6-3 again, 6-0, and then goes 0-3 in those games, like nothing has changed. Like all Florida does is beat. And so it'll be really interesting to see what Florida is able to do next year, because this year's over, right? Like the best you're going to do is 8-4, maybe 9 if you win a bowl game. But the best you're going to do is 8-4, which is a severe disappointment from the fact that I think you predicted 12-0 and I even had 9-3. So a little bit surprising that Florida would drop another one when I was trying to give them credit. But I think it's going to be interesting for Mullen. Like, how does he continue? Because just beating – I mean, this year they didn't even beat the teams they were supposed to beat. But just beating the teams that you're supposed to beat is no longer good enough.
Sure, right? Sure. Like, so I think this is a gut check moment for Mullen. I honestly think this week is a gut check week. I think, you know, you're right. Obviously, the best Florida can finish during the regular season is 8-4. I would consider that a disappointment overall. However, I do kind of feel like this is a free fall spiral. So stopping that free fall is still important, because if you go less than 8-4, then it's a real disappointment. I'm interested to see how Florida comes out against South Carolina. Florida's a much better team than South Carolina. But I need to know that there's some continuity behind closed doors. I don't care what it looks like outside.
Yeah, I'll say I think it's – I don't know. Like, I hate to disagree because I feel like we've agreed on most of the show. So, like, of course, we're 45 minutes in now. It's time to disagree. But I don't know that the next 4 weeks are truly stopping a free fall because of how –
But it can get worse.
It could get worse.
It can get worse.
But I –
There's four games left of the season. It can get worse. So Florida.
My take there is I just think that Florida is so much better than all four. Like, Florida's going to be a double-digit favorite in all four of the games. Again, outside of maybe FSU winning the next three games and then people thinking that's closer than it is. But I just think that.
But Florida was a double-digit favorite against Kentucky and LSU too.
You know, Vegas got those wrong. But Kentucky LSU are better than all four of these teams you're going to play.
I mean, you've spent all of the season telling me how bad they were. So I'm just – this is my point. I don't think that Florida winning these next few games, these next four games, shows that, like, they're back. But I think that it shows, okay, we're not still hemorrhaging. You can really do some considerable damage with four games left in the season still. I think Florida should win these games, but Florida's already lost games that they should have won. So I don't like, there is more damage to be done potentially. So I want to know what it's like in the locker room. I want to know that everybody gut checked. We're ready to complete the job and at hand. They should win these four games, but they should have won other ones. I need to know that they can do what they should do for the last third of the season.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it would be very, very disappointing if they were to lose any of them.
But it's already been disappointing, so we can't say it's out of the realm of possibilities.
I think any of these four losses would be worse than any of the other four. Like, any one of these losses would be worse than losing to anyone else.
Well, because at least the teams are worse than the teams that they have lost to.
Correct. Yeah. So any of these losses would be worse.
But I think that it's kind of splitting hairs when you're looking at all games you should win, and then splitting hairs of like, well, you should have won this game, but this team's a little bit better. Like, it's.
Yeah, but I mean, you go on the road. You go on the road at night to Kentucky, and you know Dan Mullen, unlike your last couple of coaches, has historically struggled with Kentucky, and so like that's not that big of a shock. And then an LSU team that is a train wreck, but very talented. Those two losses are much different than losing to like a Sanford or a South Carolina or Missouri again, or even really a Florida State. You know, I think the Florida State game would be a little bit worse than losing Kentucky, especially since it's in the swamp.
Yeah. You know,
as opposed to at Kentucky at night, weird game. I think all four of these losses would be much worse than any other loss that has happened. Florida comes out as a big favorite this weekend.
And yeah, so, it was like 19 points or something crazy, wasn't it?
It's come down just a little bit, but I've got it at 18 right now. But I mean, they should win that game. I don't think they cover, but I do think they win that. I don't know that I'll ever take Florida to cover again. But
well, I'm certainly never taking FSU to cover again, so I won't blame you.
They pushed.
Not what I got them at.
Yeah, you should have done more research.
Apparently.
So I had to bet on something real quick. But anyway, speaking of, all right, so the playoff committee released their first rankings today. UGA number one, pretty sure we all kind of assumed that. Bama at number two, maybe a little bit of a surprise. Michigan State undefeated at number three. Oregon at number four with their win over Ohio State. Ohio State at five, first team out. And then undefeated Cincinnati at six. Cincinnati, are they getting screwed here? Because I feel like they should be – I feel like this should be the year that they should be in, right? Or am I crazy here?
I mean,
hey, UCF. Like, I thought with all the chaos, this would be the year – that they put.
So I think that there's still a chance that Cincinnati gets in at the end of the day. I don't think that they would put them in the first released poll. Because here's the thing, right? Let's say either the top four or even the top five just crush it the remainder of the season, right? I think that there could be major argument for jumping Cincinnati. So I almost think they'd prefer to have Cincinnati end up at the end than to have to replace them, especially if they continue to win out at the end. I think the optics are worse to have them in the top four now and not finish in the top four than the optics of not having them in right now and then having them in at the end.
But I think they just deserve to be in either way. Like,
well, I mean, their quality win is what? Notre Dame?
Yeah, and who is Ohio State's?
I mean, I guess Penn State, right?
But with a lot, yeah, Penn State this weekend, who they were 18-point favorites against, did not cover the spread. Game was very close all the way throughout. No. And then they've beaten Indiana, Maryland, Rutgers, Akron, Tulsa, and Minnesota. Like, yeah, no good wins through there, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, do you think that Notre Dame is better or Penn State is better?
Well, I think Penn State's better,
The college football playoff says that they think Notre Dame's better because they ranked them 11 spots ahead of them. And that win was at Notre Dame. So, I don't know. I don't understand the justification for having Cincinnati. I don't think Cincinnati's schedule is any worse than
But things take care of themselves a little bit, right? So UGA and Bama will play in the SEC championship game unless somebody drops something.
Does Florida still have a path to get to that or no? Sorry.
Michigan State and Ohio State play in 2 weeks. So that will take care of itself. And then Ohio State has to play Michigan after that. So Ohio State will have played the number five team in the country and the number nine team in the country by the time they even get to the conference championship game, if they're going to end up in the conference championship game. So those two teams, Michigan State and Ohio State, are going to sort themselves out. UGA and Bama have a chance to sort themselves out. If Georgia beats Alabama, more than likely Alabama's path to the playoffs are over, unless somehow it ends up incredibly close and something else happens, you know, down the road, a la like 2007 or something like that. So let's say UGA and Bama get in, and then let's say Ohio State gets in or Michigan State. It's going to be one or the other. It's not going to be both. You're either then looking at Oregon or Cincinnati. And let's see, who does Oregon have the rest of the way? I mean, I think Oregon's schedule was pretty light this season.
They play Washington, Washington State, Utah, Oregon State, and then they'll play somebody in the Pac-12 championship.
I mean, I think that there's an argument that Cincinnati will jump Oregon. If Oregon is that fourth team, I think that there's a great chance Cincinnati is actually that fourth team.
Oregon's got a better win by beating number three Ohio State to me, or number five Ohio State at this point.
So then is that then justified for Cincinnati to sit at five if Michigan State and Ohio State have sorted each other out? Because whoever ends up there is going to have multiple top 10 wins, whichever of those two is standing. And multiple top 10 wins is going to carry more weight than Cincinnati's one Notre Dame win.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. I think that there are also some teams on Cincinnati's schedule coming down the stretch that were not ranked – most likely intentionally.
Right. Well,
justification.
For where they are. So this is what I think the problem is, right? Either you're ranking right now based on how you see these teams doing and what these teams continue to have down the stretch, which maybe then justifies where they are. I don't know. Or you're ranking only to this point in the season. But then if you're only ranking to this point in the season, it's not fair to say Ohio State still has two top eight teams or top nine teams left on their schedule to play and put them there. So I think that maybe that's part of the problem is none of us know what the hell is the method to putting them in. And honestly, the college football playoff doesn't actually define what the method is for putting them in there. And so maybe that's part of the issue, is that it's a perception issue more than anything, because I really do think, at the end of the day, you can justify a UGA, Bama, Oregon, Michigan State.
I think it's money.
Well, of course it is. Well, first of all, we can just be clear about we are putting together the best matchups for our sponsors and for our TV contracts.
Which really aren't the best matchups ever because I just saw that 4-1 right now, the Oregon-Georgia game, Georgia would be an 18-point favorite. And that Bama would be like a Michigan State. Not ranked by the College Football Playoff Committee, but ranked by the AP. See if you can spot the – this is from Reddit College Football. See if you can spot the college the common theme here. Number 16 in the AP poll, UTSA. Number 20, Houston. Number 21, Coastal Carolina. Number 23, SMU. Number 24, Louisiana. All five of those teams. One of them up in the top 16 of the AP. Three of them ranked. Three of them are on Cincinnati schedule. All of them, obviously, group of five teams. I think the playoff committee has drawn a line in the sand and said, if you're a group of five team, you're not invited. This is not a playoff. Well, this is an invitational.
Right.
These are the teams that are invited. To have a team that's ranked 16 in the AP and not even be ranked in the playoff, like not even give them a 25th, right? We know they're not going to the playoff. We know they're not making it.
But it's an acknowledgement.
Group of five teams that are ranked. Five group of five teams that are ranked in the AP and not ranked them at all in the playoff committee. This is not for who it's in. This is just
what would the lines? What would the lines be of Cincinnati versus any of the four above them? Do we know?
I think with Cincinnati and Georgia,
so
is if it's 18 with Oregon, it's maybe 24 with Cincinnati. So like not too much different. I will tell you this: if the BC to be out right now, it would be Georgia 1, Cincinnati 2, Oklahoma 3, Alabama 4, Michigan State 5, Ohio State 6, Michigan 7, Notre Dame 8, Oregon, Wake Forest 10. It essentially is only what you've done up to this point with those rankings.
Right. So my question. Doesn't Wake Forest have every bit of the argument that Cincinnati does?
I don't know who Wake Forest's best win is against, but they're about to have to prove it in these.
But they're 7-0 in a Power 5 conference, right?
They're an underdog. Yeah, I don't know. I think that really, I mean, if you just, I don't know if you're watching the eye test, I think Wake has not looked as good as Cincinnati. But yeah, I mean, they're ranked 9th.
I just think
now
when at the end of the day, we're going to be able to.
If Wake is a underdog at UNC this weekend, so if they win that, I think they'll get a little bit of a bump. Then they play number 19, NC State. If they win that, they'll get a little bit more of a bump. Then they go on the road to play Clemson. They win that. I think the Clemson name still carries a little bit of weight. They'll get a little bump. Mm-hmm. I don't see a scenario where Wake gets in because I just don't think they're going to play. Like, Wake doesn't have one ranked win yet. I think they're
But if Wake goes undefeated, Wake will be in.
I don't know. They may not have a ranked win. If Florida State upsets NC State this weekend – and then Wake beats them, like they won't be ranked when they have played them. So Wake will not. Wake's wins are Old Dominion, Norfolk, Florida State, UVA, Louisville, Syracuse, Army, Duke, and then they play UNC, NC State, Clemson, and Boston College. And so they really have played absolutely nobody. And then when they win, when they go up against the winner in the other side, I don't know that that's even any better. Who's going to win the Coastal? I mean, Miami's still alive in the Coastal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'll probably be against Pitt, who's ranked 25th right now. So I don't know. I think Cincinnati has a better argument. Cincinnati definitely has better.
Well, they might have a better argument, but I an undefeated ACC champion will end up in the playoffs if that were to happen. I don't know that I think Wake Forest is undefeated, so this is a silly argument to begin with. But I think that an undefeated ACC team ends up in the playoffs if that were to happen. But here's the deal. As we've already said, we can justify who the top four are, leaving Cincinnati out, when we look at the season as a whole and what's to come. It's just the problem that I think they're only supposed to be looking at what's come so far, which is what makes today's poll look stupid.
Yeah. The BCS, the AP, and the coaches all disagree.
But also,
the basketball playoff committee, and I hate the playoff committee. I'll just say that.
Well, but this is also why the argument for expansion is kind of stupid, because if you're just adding more teams, but the spreads are going to be insane, so you're going to end up with the original four to begin with, what is even the point outside of, I guess, TV money?
Oh, that's all it is the money. You know? Yeah. So anyway, all right, we're going to have to do picks quick. We probably won't even get – yeah, we'll do them all, but I'm going to have to edit this down a little bit to make it fit in the hour. Last week we both went 3-4. We both took Florida State. We pushed there. You took Michigan State. I took Michigan. I took Wisconsin. You took Iowa. You got Michigan. You got Michigan State. I got Wisconsin. Sheesh. We both took Pitt. Missed that. I took UGA. Got that. We both took Ole Miss, who lost outright to Auburn. We both took Notre Dame, who beat UNC. And then we split. You took Penn State. I took Ohio State. Ohio State won, but Penn State covered for the season. You are 25-33. I'm 29-29. You need to win like six of these. So no pressure, but
great.
Pick six of these right.
Okay.
Ole Miss is a 9.5-point favorite against Liberty. Ole Miss lost to Auburn last week, and I know our rule, but I think Ole Miss covers this spread.
Yeah, I do too. Give me Ole Miss.
I'm also kind of hoping that by doing this, we will jinx it into a Liberty win. Florida State is a 3-point underdog to North Carolina State. I'll take FSU here.
I'm taking FSU too. I don't know why, but I am.
Not going to gain on me by picking every single one of my picks. UNC is a 2.5-point favorite against those very Wake Forest Demon Deacons.
Give me Wake Forest.
Yeah, I like Wake Forest as well, mostly just so I can see them go undefeated and not make the playoff, and then I can talk crap to you. So Texas A&M is a 4.5-point favorite against Auburn. I think that line is set so well, and I really have no clue on this one. I'll do the opposite of whatever you do.
All right, give me Auburn.
So who do you want?
Auburn.
Oh, going to make me cheer for Jimbo like that, huh? Mm-hmm. Bama is a 28.5-point favorite against LSU. I think every time that I say, man, that's just so many points, I think they win and win by a lot. I end up regretting it. So give me Bama.
I was just going to say, I don't bet against Nick Saban. Sorry.
Kentucky is a 1-point favorite against Tennessee.
Give me Tennessee.
I kind of like Tennessee here as well. I'll roll with you on this one. Florida is an 18-point favorite against South Carolina. Give me South Carolina to cover. I like Florida to win.
I'll take Florida.
How come?
Because I am hoping that Dan Mullen has circled the horses and they're ready to go.
Clemson is a 4-point favorite against Louisville, at Louisville. I like Clemson here. I think
give me Louisville. Give me Louisville.
Okay. All right, cool. We'll be back next week. Hopefully our teams will have the same record at 4-5. Florida State will pick up a win and you guys will drop a bad one to South Carolina so I can make more jokes and you can tell me why Mullen has not lost control. I'm glad that we don't do recruiting on this show because, as you know, we do that after football season. But we appreciate those that tune in and those that enjoy hearing us argue for a little over an hour a week. We enjoy doing it, some of us more than others. But I'm going to go watch the rest of this World Series and all the things I bet on. So hope you guys have a good night. Thanks for hanging out, and go Noles.